almost as if the companions had walked past a deadly predator, and it let them go only because there was bigger prey to feed upon. Unseen danger lurked in the vill, and Christie would warn the others to stay alert. A group of men was in the street, rolling dice made from carved bone. Knives and animal pelts were passed back and forth, as bets were won or lost.
Move!
A man glanced up from the game.
Fuck off!
Then he saw the amount of weapons on display, and tried to grin, but failed miserably. Mitchum gave the man a dangerous look.
My friend said, move.
Scrambling to their feet, the gamblers left their dice and pelts to race away, never once looking back. Continuing onward, the companions walked their horses over the spot, crushing the skins and dice to bits under the pounding horse hooves.
Sailors. Useless bastards.
Local ship?
Nah, I know those men. They're off a trader from the Rougelap Islands.
That's north of here, right? Near Forbidden Island.
Pretty close, yeah.
Mitchum grimaced.
Wherever you're going with your own boat, be sure to stay away from that hell zone. Bitch of a place. The currents can tear the hull off a ship, and on shore there's nothing but rad pits and muties.
Ryan and the others said nothing, not even daring to exchange glances. But now they had a goal. Why row through the shark-infested waters when they could buy a ride? Finally, some good luck was coming their way. Turning a corner, the companions dropped off their horses at a stable and walked over to the inn. A big sign hanging out front was decorated with the single word grotto and a hand-painted picture of a fork for those who couldn't read. The front door led to a foyer with another door and a metal turnstile. Inside, the pink walls were heavily decorated with faded pictures and torn posters of nude women. A row of small booths along the back wall was full of wire racks holding garish paperback books whose outlandish covers left nothing to the sexual imagination.
It's a converted porn bookstore.
No wonder the inn was so popular with the sec men. Jack studied one of the posters. Nice.
What that?
The physician scratched her head before answering.
Sort of a gaudy house for folks who didn't actually want to have sex.
Jack stared at the woman as if she were insane, and Mildred shrugged. She couldn't think of another way to explain the establishment. Vacant redwood picnic tables filled the room, and the only customers were a couple of sailors eating a roast of some kind at the far end of the room. As the companions took the largest table, Mitchum went into the kitchen to talk with a cook, and then departed to handle some official duties. But he swore to come back around dusk to take them to the Baron for drinks. Easing straps off shoulders, the group removed their backpacks and eagerly settled down to wait for the food. The cold horse meat had fueled their bodies, but tasted like red clay. There were no utensils of any kind in view, so each dug out a wooden spoon from their clothing, being very careful not to reveal any of the military hardware hidden under their clothes. Ryan placed his two muzzle loaders blatantly on the table, with both hammers cocked to forestall any trouble from the locals. The sailors at the far table noticed the weapons and immediately stopped talking to concentrate on their own meal. A few minutes later, the kitchen door swung open, and out came two girls carrying an enormous iron pot. The servers dripped sweat as they hauled the cauldron of soup to the table, while an old man with no teeth placed cracked bowls before each person. The bowls were clean, but had seen hard use. Mildred recognized it as a nearly unbreakable brand, which was guaranteed to last a lifetime. She had to admit for once, Madison Avenue hadn't lied about the durability of a product. As carefully as if they were delivering liquid nitro, the girls ladled the hot soup into each bowl, filling them to capacity. Not a drop fell as the plastic ladle conveyed the steaming brew. As they hauled their cauldron back to the steamy kitchen, the old man returned with small loaves of bread. They were all of a different shape, but a smooth, even brown, and smelled wonderful. Jack snatched one from the platter and took a bite.
Mmm. Made breadfruit. Mmm. Good.
J.B. looked at the contents of his bowl.
At least they didn't serve as fish heads.
All of a sudden, the oldster backed away in fear.
No, sir. Please, sir. No sweepings for nobles. It's good stew. Please don't beat me, sir.
The stew is fine.
Ryan was unmoved by the display of fear. He had seen similar faces all his life. In most vills, the people were little more than slaves, tortured and chilled at the whim of the sec men who ruled. Apparently the same was true here. The strong ruled the weak. At least until the wheat got blasters. Then everything went to hell.
Could we have some water, please?
Bobbing his head non-stop, the man hurried away.
Yes, sir. At once, sir. Without delay, sir.
Sweepings? Must use the stuff that falls on the floor to make soup.
Probably what's left over in other folks' bowls, too.
Horrid.
From somewhere outside, the sound of a whip was audible again. But this time, the cries were female.
Seen dogs treated better than these people.
Christy tasted the stew. It was very good. Hot and thick, full of fish meat, crab, mussels, some odd veggies, with floating bits of herbs for flavor. The girls returned with coconut shells cut in two, the bottoms flattened to make crude mugs. The other put a bamboo bucket full of water amid the dinner, and Mildred slipped some bread into the girl's pocket. The child glanced once sideways, but made no other indication that she knew what had happened. Jack dipped a loaf into the soup and tore off a chunk.
Bear an idiot. No food. Folks can't work.
They'll turn on him soon, and I hope they win.
When we sail away, maybe we could leave these flintlocks behind.
Slurping clean a spoon, J.B. nodded agreement.
I won't need them once we're at sea. Might even make some friends in case we come back this way.
An exemplary idea. The enemy of my enemy and all that.
Freeze, Outlanders!
The companions looked up to see three Sekhmen enter the room, blasters in their hands. Two of the men were dressed as sailors, while the third was a local Sekhman.
Keep your hands away from those flints, and maybe you live for a while longer.
His flintlocks on the table, Ryan placed his hands in his lap and eased the safety off the Sig Sauer hidden under his shirt. Unfortunately, the new arrivals' weapons were already drawn. He needed a diversion to get a bead on them. Without warning, Mildred jerked her arm while Jack flipped his hand. The plate from under the bowl skimmed through the air and smashed into the face of a sailor, and the Sekhman staggered backward to the wall with a knife in his throat. The attack startled the last man for only a second, but before he could react, Doc lunged forward and buried his blade into the man's throat, slicing vocal cords and the jugular. By then, Ryan had his piece out and finished them off with a whispering round to the head. The lifeless bodies collapsed to the floor as Mitchum appeared from the kitchen with a primed flintlock in both hands.
Run! They know!
The man stopped, taking in the scene.
Shitfire. They beat me here.
Ryan swung his 9mm pistol toward the man, and the two stayed motionless until Mitchum slowly lowered his blasters.
You have to leave. Leave. Immediately. I was with the new Sekhman picking up his things from the dock when a fleet of PDs arrived. Some big caliber named Glassman told us that you're all wanted by Lord Baron Kinnison, dead or alive. Baron Thayer is closing the vill like screwing the lid on a jar, and wants you trapped in here.
He gestured at the corpses.
Those fools must have decided to try and capture you themselves and not share the reward.
Has he sealed off the front gate yet?
Blocked solid. You'd never get out that way now.
Any other exits?
Mitchum made a sour face and nodded his head before speaking. He looked as if there were a bad taste in his mouth.
Just one. There's a secret escape tunnel for the Baron. Only Thayer and myself know about it.
Is the kitchen staff alive?
They ran away when I walked in with my blaster out.
Good.
Mildred put the bulky flintlock and ammo pouch on the table, then drew her .38 ZKR target pistol.
Come with us.
Mitchum sadly shook his head.
Can't. Thayer will chill my brother and his wife if I'm caught helping you.
Lama and Sword at the ready. Doc went to the front door and checked outside. The vill was still, no reaction yet to the sounds of battle. Strange. It was almost as if the bookstore was soundproof.
So where's the exit?
Ryan got rid of his own excess weapons. Then he holstered the Sig Sauer and unwrapped the Steyr from his bedroll.
Go to the Baron's home. There's a locked latrine on the south side. That's a fake. Ladder inside leads down to a tunnel. That's the only way out, aside from the front gate.
Any traps?
None that I know of.
Thank you.
Just repaying his debt.
Ryan worked the bolt on the long blaster to chamber around, then slid it over his shoulder. Drawing the Sig Sauer, he pointed it at Mitchum.
What do you want it?
Leg.
The colonel tightened his jaw.
And this makes us even. The slate is clean. We meet again, I'll ace your ass like any other invader threatening my vill.
Fair enough.
Ryan then shot the Sekhman in the outermost part of the thigh, well away from the bone or major arteries. As Mitchum fell, slapping a hand on the wound to staunch the flow of blood, Ryan shot him again in the upper arm.
Ah! You bastard!
Mitchum groaned, raw hatred contorting his handsome features, both hands busy putting pressure on his wounds.
Now nobody will doubt any story you tell them.
The companions proceeded to move out the door into the night. The ville was quiet, the darkness lying over the trailers like a thick blanket.